This Bible teaching on Revelation and End Time Truth by David Ebal is titled Pyramid in the Bible.
Largest building in the world. The thing that has more stones, occupies more cubic space than any other building, is the Great Pyramid of Giza. Giza is a small town just outside Cairo, and really, when we think of it, we don't think of it as Giza, we think of it as Cairo, because it's kind of like Harrisburg and Pakistan. Whoever thinks of Pakistan? You just drive in, you know, and it's still Harrisburg. So, from Cairo, you can see this massive monument, and we took a bus out for a long, long ways until we got to the edge of the town. Then we got on camels. And we took the camels all the way out. We went into the first pyramid, which was King Tut's tomb. And coming out of King Tut's tomb, I told our guide that it was very, very important to me. I had to get inside this great pyramid, for I'd been studying it, and I knew some of the symbolic meanings. God has been good to us over the years, and prior to that, had taken us through Europe on several occasions to study symbols. Naturally, because I am interested in symbols, I showed you this symbol, which is a symbol of the United States. And throughout the world, we're studying heraldry and symbols because we have discovered not only can you find things out about nations from their language, you can also find out things from their pictures. Now, that makes sense, as they would carry on, you know, the meaning of a certain symbol would carry right along with those people. And so, we were very interested in going into this great, the Great Pyramid, called the Great Pyramid of Cheops. I talked to the man who was in charge of the tour, and he said, impossible, you cannot go. There is no way that we can get you into this Great Pyramid. And so I talked some more and held out my wallet, and he said, well, maybe. And after a while, we were able to work out a thing. And then it was the kind of thing that we had to make a decision right then. Have you ever been in one of those places of your life where you just had to do it then? You either did it, you see? And so while the people were getting on the bus, some folks were climbing up on the bus to go off to the Sphinx, our group, that is the group that I had hired on the spot, they brought some camels up. So we got on our camels and we headed over for the Great Pyramid of Giza. Climbed up the sides, and I'll tell you, just climbing up the side to this point, you're real, real high. You're on top of all the buildings when you get to this point. How high? I don't remember. Well, there it is. 5,496 pyramid inches. Oh my, divide that into feet. 500 feet, we'll say. About 500 feet, something like that, to the top.
Is that limestone
lying
up there?
Yeah, it says ground level, Tom.
That's the ground. Yeah, you got the idea. Now, underneath the Great Pyramid, it's a solid rock, and that solid rock has been cut out. Then they started laying layers. I think that's sandstone, isn't it, Betty? Mainly sandstone. Now, that some of those black areas on your picture are granite. And on the outer casing of the pyramid, it used to be limestone, polished to a mirror finish, and covered with gold as a reflector. This becomes later on, as we study in the Bible, some of the factors concerning this great pyramid. This pyramid predates every known thing on the world. It predates written history. There are no hieroglyphics in this pyramid, though the other pyramids have hieroglyphics. This one has none. This pyramid is obviously a lot older than the oldest dated pyramid. Though there are people who claim to know when this was written, if you'll read their books carefully, you'll find out this. They're postulating, they're guessing concerning the history of this pyramid. Therefore, I guess I got a right to guess too. And I've guessed a little bit on the origin of the pyramid. And I think that I've got it figured out from the Bible concepts. Now, let's see where to start. Just some fantastic things about it. First, I think we'll just do a little entertaining at first with the numerical concepts of the pyramid. Then we'll get into the Bible, see what the Bible has to say about the pyramid. Then we'll back off into its prophetic concepts. If we measure along one side at the ground level, we find out that in multiples and tens and hundreds, and I'm going to move the decimal point around freely, and I'm not going to try to describe what I'm doing here because it gets in too much of a detail, but just basically, when we measure the pyramid in pyramid inches, the length of it is 241 something. It gives the exact number of days in a year. Exact, so close, even including the leap year, and then once in a great while we don't have a leap year, and it even shows that factor. And it takes into account the fact that we have what we call a sidereal year and some other progression of the equinox kind of thing. And every 25,000 years, the stars line up where they used to be. That's the best way I can tell you. Every year, the stars don't line up with our year by 50 seconds. They go 50 seconds out. That's the best way we can say it. And in 25,000 years, everything lines up, and the guys that built this pyramid included that factor in their measurements. The pyramid inch is the same as our inch, except it varies about 2/1. In other words, our inch is only 2/1 from the pyramid inch. And that ought to tell you something right there. Well, you know, there's a big argument whether we ought to use our inch or the metric system. Well, ours predates the metric system. And in fact, our inch is a far more accurate system of measuring the globe than the metric system is, though there's lots of argument among engineers. Now, when they measure this pyramid, here's something that's a little hard to explain, but here it goes. They can tell where the casing stones should be. They can tell how far out they should be, though they're not there. The way they did that is they did find some eventually way down when they were digging around. They found some. They found out how they fit. They got their measurements and projected those measurements up the sides. The pyramid sides are not really exactly flat, but they're concave. And there's a reason for that. Hopefully we can get in that later. Dimensions such as, well, from the center to the designed height, when taken to 10 to the ninth power, is the distance to the sun. If you take the distance from the corner of the pyramid and set this pyramid on a circle, I forget how they do it. They divide the numbers, and anyway, they got the pi, and it comes out 3.1416, and it goes on like that. Right to they had pi right down to the dimension which our computers are now coming to. When I say pi, I'm not talking about coffee and donuts now, you know. All right. I don't have to get into that. This pyramid contains all kinds of mathematical functions. It's oriented, the way it's set and built on the earth, the sides, that is the projected sides, are a true north and true south, true east and true west, so perfect that we set our instruments and calibrate them with the pyramid. In other words, even with our fantastic accuracy of our instruments today, when they calibrate with the pyramid, they work out because this is so perfectly aligned with the earth itself. Let's try a few other things just for sight. If you look at the top of the pyramid and go off at the pyramid angle. Now, the pyramid angle is a bisector of this angle, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute. If you move from that angle, from the top of the pyramid out, and draw a line on a map, you'll draw it right across where Moses crossed the Red Sea, right at the spot. Then it goes all the way up to Bethlehem, and comes right, lands right on Bethlehem. And if you go the other direction, it goes to Mount Sinai where the law was given, crosses right over the top of that. In other words, you can call these coincidences if you want, but you just, it's kind of funny.
Are you talking about the corners?
Yeah, not exactly the corners. You go out at the angle, bisect 51 degrees, 51 minutes, and 14.3 seconds. And there's a reason for that. You see, this happens to be, just happens to be exactly to minutes and seconds, the angle of the atomic lattice of the diamond. Just happens. They understood atomic lattice structure.
Did we get our dimensions from there too,
from
this pyramid? Or?
Yes, our inch, our foot, and our measuring system are all exactly in this pyramid.
I say this, when we got this dimension, where did it come from?
No one knows for sure, but some people think that these dimensions were carried through the tribes and through the people to England and finally to here.
This angle that you're talking about bisecting, is that a horizontal angle or a vertical angle?
Right here it's vertical, but then it's horizontal. It doesn't matter.
You said the same line went from the Red Sea and then over to Bethlehem.
Yeah.
I mean, it went from the Jordan and the Bethlehem. The other one goes to the Red Sea. The one goes across, where he crossed the Jordan and then.
Okay. I got my tongue in front of my eye teeth and didn't. Now, the one that goes north from Cairo crosses the Jordan and crosses Bethlehem. The one that goes south crosses the Red Sea and crosses Sinai. But they're not at 45 degree angles. They're at what we call a pyramid angle. And that's a big, long study in itself. Now, if you want to get into great details of it, get the books. You see? They got books that thick on this, and I can't even remember what they say. In fact, if any of you have been in my home, maybe you've noticed that I have a set of books this wide called Pyramidology, of all these details and fancy facts. And it after a while, you have to say there's something to it, or this is absolutely the craziest thing I ever heard in my whole life. And if you spend any time at all, you finally have to say there's something to it. Remember now that Moses was trained as the son of the Pharaoh. And it tells us in the Bible that Moses learned all the knowledge of the Egyptians. Is that right? Now, you can take a few things, just play with these things here. The dimension of the Grand Gallery is the same dimension as the Holy Place. The dimension of the King's Chamber is the same as the Holy of Holies in Moses' Tabernacle. The dimension of the copper, which is on the inside of the King's Chamber, is exactly the dimension of the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, this. Now, the center of this, well, I'm getting to the good parts in a minute, but I'm working into it. See, the heart of this thing would be the coffer, the sarcophagus. And in this case, those dimensions are exactly, every dimension, the same as the Ark of the Covenant or Ark of the Testament. Well, what's that show you? Somebody, either one of two conclusions. Either the designer of this was the designer of that, or the one who learned these things took them and put them in Moses' Tabernacle. Now, I personally believe that the designer of this building is the same one who designed Moses' Tabernacle. and told him what dimensions to work in that. For he was using in another set of dimensions. He was using Hebrew cubits. And how you, do you understand what I'm saying? Moses was using Hebrew cubits, and these people are using, for lack of a better word, English inches, though English inches really came from theirs, and yet all the dimensions are the same. So I don't really think that Moses copied it all and then rebuilt the thing out on the desert. I think God was involved in both. When we draw a line along the edge and another line at, let's see, I forget how they picked that line up. I believe it was the floor of the pit or the floor of the, yeah, it's the floor of the pit or the pit floor. I think that's where it is. It comes to an imaginary point out here. And moving from this imaginary point and measuring from this point, oh no, I remember what it was. It was a straight line down here and a straight line through the center of this passage here. Then you pick up an imaginary point and start measuring up this passage, which becomes a timeline. And moving along the timeline and starting with Adam, assuming that Adam would be the start and that the real pyramid, this is hard for me to say it, but if you can imagine, instead of just the pyramid being like this, put a bigger bottom on it. And now start measuring from the bigger bottom that's way down under the ground. You got it? From those corners. And not arbitrarily, but by straight lines, and then measuring with these pyramid inches, you find out surely that every time you cross various parts, ground level and various places here, you find out exactly the number of years from Abraham to Moses and from Moses to different things and all the patriarchs. Every time you cross one of these lines, you come out exactly the number of years between each one of the patriarchs, which is an interesting coincidence. After a while, you begin to say, well, it just can't be. There's got to be a divine designer that's lined this thing up and that we're not here by accident. You see, if you keep this thought in mind and you begin to project these things, well, really, if Moses and Abraham and all those guys weren't here by accident, then neither am I. Neither are we. There is even a day for you and I to be manifested, you see. So, coming up like this, well, first let's talk about descending passage. This particular descending passage points to the star Draconis. That's dragon or devil. And it just so happens that at the bottom of the descending passage is the pit called hell. Now remember, in our Bible, that we have Psalm 48, beautiful for situation, on the sides of the north is Mount Zion. And this is a counterfeit because this is on the sides of the north. And the devil is counterfeited, and really, I'm going to try to explain it this way, this is a counterfeit for Mount Zion. Now, the writers of other books don't see it this way. This particular book, Larkin, this book from Destiny Publishers, or no other book that I've ever found anywhere will tell you what I just told you. So you're hearing some brand new things that just can't are not available in any library. But according to my analysis, this is a counterfeit for Mount Zion because this was built by none other than Adam. And Adam was the man who knew more than any other man. For Adam ate of the tree of good, and it was his soul thing that got so big, remember? He got the big head, huh? Remember all this? And as you study about Adam, who also is called Daystar, you begin to see that surely this was, or had to be, a monument built to his knowledge. For after all, he had 1,000 years to do it in, remember? And he knew everything. The smartest man alive. He named every animal. And all things, all knowledge was in this man. Now, he built, I believe, this thing and had the others do it. And I honestly believe that very soon you're going to find out that they're going to find Adam. Well, there are marks on it indicating the flood was somewhere, I think, in here. Somewhere in there, there are indications that it was flooded at one time. You know, flood marks like your house. What? It says in the Bible that there'll be no one wiser than Solomon after him. That's kind of sticky, isn't it? But no, I honestly believe that Adam in that realm was wiser. In that realm. That might be that Solomon could have been wiser, but he didn't build this. Well, when I said 1,000, I mean, you're going to argue about a couple. You know, he was 950-some, so, you know, that's good enough for 1,000 for what we're talking about now. Oh, by the way, through this whole lecture today, I'm rounding off. I mean that. In other words, one of the problems is my mind isn't big enough to contain all the numbers. And then I didn't think that they were too important to the exact. For instance, I told you I'm going to move the decimal point without even considering it in some of these dimensions. The decimal point, some of the numbers I give you are really times 10 and some of them are times 100. But I'm not doing that. I'm just giving you the base numbers, for that to me proves the point. Now, as we come up here from Moses and the law began to take us up, you see, Adam took us down and his sin. And then we have Moses and he began to take us up. Now, the law definitely and the moral considerations of the law really do bring us back into harmony with God. For after all, if we ate the things, if we acted the way, if we wore the clothes, if we did all those things, we would really be nice guys. All the way. But you know, that didn't do the whole trick, because the law began to be measured on the outside instead of the inside. And so Jesus came to clean up on the inside. But still, for the moral nature of the law is an ascending kind of an idea, not a descending. It can bring us back. Is that making sense to you? Now, from that dimension up to the start of the Grand Gallery just happens to be the number of years from Moses to Jesus. Entering the Grand Gallery, we find a stone right here at the very first called the Stone of Stumbling that is 33 and a half years wide. How long was Jesus' ministry? How long was Jesus here? 33 and a half years. If you trip over the Stone of Stumbling, you fall down this well shaft right into the pit. I mean, you know, how much more do you have to see? Let's face it.
There's actually a well shaft
there. Yes, there is a well shaft there. And if you fall over this 33 and a half year wide, when I say year wide, you understand really if we measured it, it would be inch wide, but not really inches like ours because their inches are 2,000ths off. But I bet you wouldn't have found that if I had laid the ruler down. But the people that have measured these things have been pretty accurate. Can you imagine that? Now let's talk about some of the accuracy just while we're on it. The temperature in here, oh, I forget. It's a constant, I believe it's 68 degrees. Never varies. That's, you know, they just found out that the National Bureau of Standards, that's the way they had to do it. They had to make the measurements and tell what temperature they were made at, because, you know, a ruler goes in and out according to... Now, of course, that doesn't matter if you're making a dress or a pattern or even a house, but when you're working with extremely fine measurements, it does. You even have to know what temperature to measure the particular thing at. And the... A stretch rule. In other words, you measure it at one thing and then know that it's going to shrink back. So you have a different dimension. Yes?
Are you familiar with what they call Joe blocks?
Well, I've used them.
Yeah, they're manufactured under completely climate-controlled conditions.
Right. And so that's the concept. We want you to see that this particular, that the temperature is also in exact control, which then controls the measurements exactly. Where else was I? Assuming that you're an initiate and don't get caught by the stumbling stone, well, that means that you're a Christian. Do you understand this? Then it's not a stone of stumbling, but it's kind of a launching pad, and it puts you into the grand gallery. Now, really, basically, you walk horizontally for a while, and then you have to reach up like this to climb up and get up this ramp. And we did that, though they had built some wooden stairs by then to help us up. And we started up the ramp. The ramp is approximately 2,000 years long. Yeah. Now, the fact is, it's really, we have come to the end of the ramp, and we're in the veil right now.
June 7th.
No, it was before that. I don't want to get into too much because there's some arguments there, but it's according to which book you read. But technically, everyone agrees that we're in the veil. We've left the, can I say, age of grace? And we're beginning the age of the millennium or the kingdom age. That's the reason life is so hard for you right now. It was a lot easier for Grandpa, I'll tell you. Because he had his rules and he knew what rules and he obeyed the rules and that was it. And life was simple. But the reason things are so complicated right now and the Pope's throwing out 49 saints and the Methodists threw out the blood in their song book. And you see what I'm talking about? And I'm not trying to say this about any particular group, but everybody's all shook up. See, let's face it. And the Mennonites, they don't know right from wrong either anymore. They don't know whether to wear the prayer cap or not, and they're arguing about that. You know what I mean. Come on now. Let's face it. That's the big thing. So the reason is that we're in this area right now. And what this is you got to get down on your knees to get through here. Hey, that makes sense, doesn't it? By the way, in Egyptian lore, this is called the tribulation. And according to their dating systems, we're in it. Now, I'm not saying we're in the tribulation. I'm saying according to their dating systems, we're in it. Some of us believe it. In this veil, there are technically three veils. The final veil is made of three veils. Now, how many feasts are there in the Jewish year?
Three
feasts. What are they? Passover? Pentecost, tabernacles. How many veils are there in Moses' tabernacle?
Three
veils. The door, the outer veil, the inner veil. I'm suggesting to you that before you make your final entry into the kingdom and stand up straight, you're going to have all three changes. And you're going to be on your knees three times, ducking under three veils. These veils are, the best I can describe it is, a stone wall about as thick as this, but it's down about this high, and instead of my being able to walk through the passageway, there's a passageway under, and I must get down on my hands and knees and walk under it. And if I'm careful, I can stand up between two of the veils, and two of the other veils has a much wider period. Or length in between them. I didn't say that exactly right. I hope you understood what I was saying anyway. I goofed up. There are only three veils. But these three veils are really one veil, in a sense, called the veil, made out of three of them. And we're ready right now, according to the measurements, to come into the king's chambers. Now, everyone here is aware of the fact that we've hit dates accurately, the last 16 to the very day, huh? The reason for this accuracy is the measurement of the veils, the width of the bricks, the distance between the bricks, and with these measurements, we've hit 16 out of 16, and there's only one left. What was that? April 2nd, next year. After that, which should be the last change, you see, let's face it, when money fails, it drives you to your
knees.
And the money system is failing. Now, here's something you've got to see, though. This doesn't really prophesy our victory. All these dimensions prophesy the defeat. Now, this is a hard concept. Let me try it this way. Two boxers, two prize fighters. Okay, one guy lands a punch. See, now he's down. When did the loser lose? I think he lost when he got punched. Huh? Don't you? When did the winner win? When he said, 9, 10, thou winner. You know. All right. In other words, there's a time frame or a period between the punch and the 10. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? And on these dating systems, there is a time frame or a difference on the dates between the failure of the money system and the dates generated by Alexander the Great's life that predict our victories. Now that was a big pill to swallow, wasn't it? Now let's go back and see what we're talking about. If you want to, you may copy some of these scriptures onto some of the white edge paper of your pyramid paper. Now, Isaiah 19:19 tells us that in Egypt, at the border and in the midst of Egypt, and at the border thereof, there will be an altar and a pillar raised. Well, it's impossible to be in the midst and at the border. Except here. Because this pyramid is built halfway between Lower Egypt and Upper Egypt. That makes it in the midst. But it's built exactly on the border of the desert and the tillable land in Lower Egypt. And it's exactly on the border. I'm referring right now to 19:19. And it tells us in Isaiah 19:19 that there is in Egypt and in that day. Let's turn to it now and read. I think I'll start in verse 16. Isaiah 19:16. In that day, what day? I would like to submit for your analysis this the day of the Lord, which is the opening of the sixth seal, which should open now at 9:30. All right. Now, in that day shall Egypt be like unto a woman, shall be afraid and fear because of shaking the hand of the Lord of hosts, which shall shake over it. And the land of Judah shall be a terror unto Egypt. Everyone that maketh mention thereof shall be afraid in himself because of the counsel of the Lord of hosts, which had determined against it. Now, on my margin notes, I've put June the 7th, 1967, and some of you are aware of the fact that I personally believe that the sixth seal did open at that date, right? Though I would never try to prove it to you. Here's an indicator as to why I believe it. Because I believe that we're in the tribulation, I believe that the sixth seal has opened. I don't mean tribulation, I mean the day of the Lord, day of wrath, that day. the sixth seal has opened, and here this is a direct prophecy of the war. I mean, it tells them how they, you know, you remember at the war they were really afraid, and they ran, and don't you remember the Egyptians ran real fast? In fact, Israel couldn't sometimes run fast enough to catch up with them. Said, wait, we're supposed to be fighting. verse 18, in that day shall five cities in the land of Egypt speak the language of the Canaan. Swear to the Lord of hosts, one shall be called the city of destruction or the city of the sun. In that day there shall be an altar unto the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt and a pillar at the border thereof unto the Lord. I'd like to suggest to you that that doesn't mean it's going to be built in that, but there shall be. In other words, the factors, let me say it this way, the revelation of the facts that made the war in June the 5th, 1967, in verse 16 and 17, predated the fact that the war came. Now, let me try it another way. I think that the revelation of what God is doing, that the king is coming, that the dates, the failure of the money system, and all this kind of thing, and is going to be made, how can I say it, a matter of world knowledge in that day. Not the pyramid is built in that day, but the knowledge of it and what it's all about will be revealed, and everybody will know it in that day. Yes, Brother Cross.
These cities, there's any reference to, you mentioned the city of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
There's another meaning of that city of destruction. Any particular city that goes by that name today?
Yeah. Can't think of it.
Or about the five cities that speak the language of Canaan?
Well, I just assumed, you're pinning me down on something I didn't want to get on, but I really thought that this had to do with the, help me out, the name of it starts with an H.
Heliopolis.
That's the city of the sun. And that the Nile should take over five of these major cities, and that the Russians, which I know it says Canaan here, but I still call it Russians, are taking over these five cities with the Aswan Dam. But you don't have to believe that. I moved Canaan into Russian then. You don't have to.
Heliopolis is the city of On, where Moses received his instruction.
That's what I was trying to get on, because they had told us about that. Well, anyway, let's go to verse 20. It will be a sign, and I believe that means the pyramid, will be a sign for a witness in the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. And they shall cry unto the Lord because of the oppressors. And he shall send them a Savior, a great one, and he shall deliver them. How many know that when Jesus comes, he's going to deliver everybody who puts their faith, hope, trust in him? Egyptian, Israelite, American, won't matter. Hallelujah. Yeah, red and yellow, black and white, it won't matter. Whoever we are, he'll take care of us. And the Lord shall be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day. There it is again. And they shall do sacrifice and oblation. Yea, they shall vow unto the Lord and perform it. I don't think they're talking about animals here, but you can put that in if you want. And the Lord shall smite Egypt, and he shall smite and heal it. How many know it's been smitten? I was just talking to that director of public works, and he says, Egypt is terrible, he says. We can't grow any crops, nothing's working. It's really smitten. And they shall return even to the Lord, and he shall be entreated of them and shall heal them. In other words, they're going to recognize it now, and they're going to say, Lord, save us. How many know that if my people who call by my name will just humble themselves and pray and turn from the wicked way, and then, you know, save them, all right? And they shall return to the Lord, and he'll be entreated of them in that day, and shall heal them. In that day there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. And the Assyrians shall come down to Egypt, and Egypt to Assyria. And the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. And one of the legs is being built right now. From Elot to to Jaffa right now.
At the highway.
The highway, yeah.
Isn't there also a railroad being built to...
I don't know anything about that. There's a highway straight as a die. Just as straight as a die. It wouldn't be too interesting because you wouldn't have to use your steering wheel from Eilat to Jaffa, which would be a start or part of the leg of that big thing. Okay. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land. We're expecting that pretty soon the Israelis and the Egyptians will knock it off. But how many know that there's got to be a lot of battles first? There's got to be some mean things going on before they get straightened around. Isaiah 19:19, I think, is going to help to get the thing straightened around eventually, because this really is a part of Israel, and it is a part of Egypt, but it's in Egypt, and it's going to help the Egyptians to see that really they got to live together with Israel, and they can't drive them out to the sea. Revelation chapter 11, please. Revelation chapter 11. Now, the concept we've been talking about is taught in Revelation chapter 11, and we're really not doing anything that's against the Bible. In fact, we're using the Bible for every step we go. There, we'll read in Revelation chapter 11. I'll start with verse 1. And there was given unto me a reed like a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and them that worship therein. Has to measure three things: the temple, the altar, and them that worship. Now, that ought to be silly. I mean, you know, you could measure a temple, but could you measure the people that are worshiping? You know, what's he want? How tall they are? How... count the number of them? How much they weigh? All right. Well, it ought to be obvious that this measure is in question. Just how do you measure a temple and an altar and the people that are worshiping? The measurement comes out in verse 2 is 42 months. In verse 3, it's 1,203 days. In verse 9, it's 3.5 days. In verse 11, it's 3.5 days. The measurement come out in periods of time, not in lineal distance. I'll wait on that. When he laid the rule down, he came up to the table and he said, well, this table is 27 days tall. Have you got the idea? It's not a lineal distance, inch, cubit, rod, but it's amount of time. Now, when you're looking at the chart, that's obvious, see? There's a ruler. It's not 7 inches long. It's 7 days long, and there's a can of inches, but it's not a can of inches, it's a can of days, if you ever bought a can of inches on those rulers. So anyway, this is the basic concept of that reed that's like a rod and it's calibrated. When we were going through the big museum in Cairo, Egypt, I had just walked down the aisle, and Betty came running up and said, David, come here, look. And I said, what? He said, over there in that case. I said, yeah. He says, look at them. I said, what? Those rods, those reeds. And I looked at the reeds and I said, yeah, those are nice reeds. And she said, no, look at them. One's a spring reed, and the other's a summer reed, and the other's a fall reed. I said, that's nice. And she said, they're calibrated in time.
Please stop your machine and turn cassette over.